and we're going to broadcast the entire lecture on the air illegally in the United States. So about 15 minutes ago, my fabulous friend bought some cables and patched them together with tape. We're trying to see if it works.
Testing. Can you hear us, Jen?
Can we hear you? Test? Monk.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. All right. I think we have everything. I'm going to go ahead and start with introductions. Ready?
Yeah. Well, we have Monk from Motor Free Radio and Carl Nimitz from Motor Free Radio and also from Cactus Radio, which is a bigger fire station no longer on the air. Well.
Okay. Can we? Is everybody understanding them? No. We're not coming in clear. Hold on a minute.
So you got a yes, you got a no. I think that was a no.
Are you sure you're not speaking German?
We could try, but we don't know German. I only know weird things.
It's all Greek to me.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Well, you sound fine either. You sound great. Testing.
I understand that word. All right. I think we're going to go ahead and start, and we'll see what happens. Greetings to everyone at the CCC. I just wanted to say thank you for having us out here. It's been an incredible experience so far. And hello to everyone listening on the internet and in Boulder, Colorado. You're listening to a lecture live at the Chaos Computer Congress in Berlin. My name is Benign Punk, and I started on Pirate Radio back in 2001 in Boulder, Colorado. And I'll just tell you the story of how it happened. Basically, this pirate station popped up, and we noticed it immediately on our dial because we have very few stations in Colorado. One person came to our local 2600 meeting, assuming that one of us had put up the station. And in fact, none of us had. It was somebody else. So when we found out, we all went on a mission to go find the people who started the pirate station. And then we got the local 2600 group very involved in the pirate station when we met them. And we started out with a transmitter and an antenna in a van. When we got involved, before then it was just a guy in his basement. And we started driving around and broadcasting from different places. And one of the places was my house for a little while. So I got real close to it. And we've had a lot of success over the last 4 years. And we've grown to 30, 40 DJs at times. And we're a whole institution based on not having institutions. So it's been a wild ride. We're going to talk to you a little bit about why we did it and the challenges we face. And then we're going to take your questions. So we're hoping this is relevant for everyone out here. Monk, do you want to tell them about why you got involved? How you got involved? Are you there? Are we connected? We'll be. All right, so I'm going to fill some dead air. What can I tell you? I can tell you a little bit about the American situation, which is what I heard. I heard that people wanted to hear about the media landscape in America right now. And basically, the situation is that the FCC is the Federal Communications Commission, and they control, they regulate all of the frequency regulations. They have a very small amount of agents scattered around the country. And we were very lucky that in Boulder,
or in Colorado, our state, there was only two agents. So it was actually very easy for us to get away with broadcasting 24/7, which we do now. And we get bothered by them about once every 6 months, and we don't talk to them, really, and then they go away, and then they come back another 6 months later. So that's very fortunate. That's not the case everywhere in the United States. And an example is a place like Florida. They've just recently made it a felony, and they have actually started putting people in jail for it. So it is changing for the worse. The reason that it's so important that we have pirate radio is because even this very small commission gets a huge amount of commercial pressure. And that's one of the reasons that we have so few stations in Colorado, is that one of the ways that they try to have a monopoly over the stations is by making the laws so that the stations have to be very far apart on the spectrum. So, for example, in Colorado, the last time I was doing radio out there, there was maybe 15 stations. I'm not sure exactly the number, but maybe 15 stations. And almost all of them, I think all but one, were owned by the same company. This company is Clear Channel, and they are a huge media conglomerate. They do all kinds of things, like billboards, all kinds of advertising, outside of just radio. And they're known for their corruption and accepting payola and whatnot. So the situation when I got involved was that there was literally about 15 or 20 songs that you could hear on radio. And because there was such an extreme lack of variety, we decided that we deserved another voice, and we got involved. Are we connected yet?
We are here. And you are live on the air in Boulder. Or you are. Can you hear us?
I can hear you.
Okay, here we can hear us. Long pause. Well, was there a question in there somewhere? Are we supposed to be telling you something specific?
Keep testing. Oh, we're good. Okay. So my question earlier, I don't know if you got it, Monk, was if you could just tell us how you you got involved and why you got involved.
All right. First of all, can you hear me all right? Please answer an email from
me. All right. We're still not getting a clear signal from you. Through the PA here. I guess I'll tell everyone how you got involved. So our friend Monk, we call him our benevolent dictator. It was his idea to start a low power FM legal station in the Boulder area in Colorado. He went through the process of applying for a license and purchased all of this, what he calls Cadillac FCC equipment. It's very fancy and FCC approved. And he had applied for a frequency and gotten permission to apply for it. In the middle of this process, the way he puts it is someone bought some senators and they changed the laws in the middle of his application. Which the application takes about a year to go through. So he had already bought all of this equipment and had all of these plans and setups to begin this low-power FM station, and they made it so that you could only have these kinds of stations in very, very rural areas, and he no longer qualified. So he says, well, I could put it all on eBay, or I could do it anyway. And that's what he did. He set it all up in his basement, and he began broadcasting illegally. And he found out immediately that he was doing it wrong. he was visited by some ham radio fanatics, CB radio fanatics, and some other people who found him leading onto other stations. And they were also upset with the radio situation and agreed to help him. And so it started with one man, and it, you know, sort of snowballed into a group of technically able radio geeks who really didn't have any other music besides Grateful Dead, which they played 24/7. So like I said, we, the hacker community, found out about them after this and decided that their programming choices needed some help, and we got involved in that way. So we have a very interesting position. Are you coming? You sound like the Swedish Chef. the parents on Charlie Brown something. I'm gonna keep talking until you come in clear. All right, so where was I? Right, Grateful Dead. So we all got involved, and while Monk was doing this in his basement, he got visited by the FCC, and we learned after that we needed to set up the radio system differently. So we put everything into vans, and we would drive our transmitter and access point, or not, antenna, to different places. And broadcast, like, from the mountains where we get really good coverage, or from different places in the city, so that it was harder to find us. And we started, at that time, we were broadcasting only nights and weekends. And that was because our research showed that FCC agents don't like to work after 5 p.m.
And they don't work before 8 a.m., and they don't work on the weekends.
good enough for government work, I guess. So we broadcasted after 5 p.m. and before 8 p.m. and on the weekends, and we were never bothered. And we had a couple of different friends in the community that we would park the van at and borrow power from. And eventually, me and my roommates volunteered. So we parked the van at our place for about 3 months, and in due time, we decided that we should broadcast 24/7, despite what our research showed. So we were moving out of our place in a couple months, and we decided that if the FCC came, then they came, and we didn't care. We were going to broadcast anyway. So we did that, and they came right on schedule. So this is my big funny story. I was home alone with a van, and I might have some news. Okay. Well, let's pause for a second. Can we hear you in Colorado? Monk, do you read me?
You're a bit on the
Capitol side. Copy, we have a problem in Houston.
Yeah, your mayor is just a little wobbly. You sound a bit wobbly. Can you hear us? Can you understand what we're saying? I think you're gone. We're still there.
Well, at least you're coming different every time.
Ah, okay, there she is.
Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
At what point did we give up here?
The wonders of technology. That's funny, this worked great in New York.
are you there? Can you say green eggs and ham?
Green eggs and ham.
All right. Well, I think we can hear you. You want to try a more complicated sentence?
A more complicated sentence? I suppose I could.
Are we all reading? Okay. Can you understand? A little?
Yeah, we can understand. We can understand you. Can you understand us?
All right, I didn't get that one.
Yes. Yes. Just so you know, you are on the air here in Boulder, Colorado right now.
On the air in Boulder, Colorado right now.
Okay, good. She got that. All right. So we'll try to talk in fairly short spurts using fairly simple words. Mostly, not that we need to for this audience, but clearly our connection is not conducive to long words like conductive. But it is conducive to things like this connection is the fuck.
Alright,
so what questions
will I
answer for you?
I love you guys, but we just can't hear you. I think we're going to have to cut it off.
Well, you know what? We can hear you, so we would like to keep broadcasting you.
And to you, too.
So stay on the phone, and we will broadcast what you do.
Yeah. All right. So, like I said, we can't hear you, and we're gonna cut you off.
No.
Okay. Help me out here, guys.
Do not hang up. We are recording you.
All right, I'm sorry about that, guys. We're not gonna be able to talk. That's too bad. Okay, well.
Good point.
Are we done?
We're still here.
We've been working on this for hours. It worked at Hope.
Okay.
All right, so they're going to hear us, and we're just not going to hear them. Suck us. What word?
The F word.
Well, I can. If I wanted to. Cause. Well, see, that's an interesting thing, because we don't have a license with the FCC. So, they... So they can't really fine us for doing stuff like that. All right, so I was telling my big funny story of how I got busted by the FCC. It was in the middle of spring, and I got bronchitis. So I went to the doctor because I had bronchitis, and I couldn't sleep, and they prescribed me codeine so that I could sleep. So it was one midsummer morning, and I was really high on codeine. So I look out my window, and I see that there's this really funny big green SUV parked in front of my house, and there's a couple of guys walking around the van. But I don't really care, so I figure that I have to go get the mail, and I do that. And I'm in my pajamas, and I go downstairs, and I get the mail, and I'm turning around to go back into my house, and these men shout, and they run up to me, and they say, no, we want to talk to you. And I turn around, and it's just like the cartoons. There's a fat guy and a skinny guy, and they're sweating profusely, right? And they run up to me, and they say, you have a pirate radio station running out of your driveway. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And they said, no, we know because we've been trespassing on your landlord's property. And we walked around and we went into your backyard and we saw that you have a bright orange extension cord running from the van to your house and another cord running up your tree to an antenna. And we know that you're broadcasting pirate radio from here. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And they had brought a policeman with them. It was actually the first visit that we got where they actually brought a policeman. And the policeman demanded to know my name and the name of all the people that I lived with and my landlord and all of their numbers. And I gave it to him. And he went and he ran the license plates of everyone parked on the street. And he found out their names. And I was just sort of standing there, and the FCC said, we want to come in. We think that you have a whole lot of radio equipment in there, and we'd like to get our hands on it. And I said, do you have a warrant? And they said, well, I'm going to be honest with you, right up front, we don't have a warrant, but we really want to come in. And I said, well, I think you should have a warrant if you want to come in. and they said, we'd really appreciate it if you would cooperate with us. And I said, you know, in my pajamas, I am cooperating. You know, I'm an American citizen, and I watch enough TV to know that if you want to come into my house, you have to have a warrant. And they got all hot and bothered, and they kept pointing at the van and asking me who owned it. And I said, I don't know. I think our landlord asked if he could keep it here, and we don't have cars, so we said yes. And I don't know what he's doing with it. And they said, we were listening to the radio this morning, and we think we heard your voice. And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And I actually wasn't on the radio that morning, so I don't know what they were talking about. They gave me a piece of paper to sign that said that I had been issued a piece of paper by them. And I said, yes, I've been issued a piece of paper by you. I can verify that with my signature. And that's all that happened. They went away and they never came back. And I'm sure that my name is on some list somewhere, but I've never been bothered by them again. And that's pretty much the story. So we learned a lot of things from this incident and from others like it that we heard from lots of other people. And I think we're up to 5 busts ourselves now. And what we learned, basically, is that the FCC is not scary. They're a very small organization, and they have regulations and not laws. And they have 2 lawyers for the entire agency, for the entire country. We have 3. So they got a hold of one of our real names one time, and they wrote us an email, and they said, you know, we'll take you to court. And we said, okay. We have more legal power than you. And we also know that you approved our frequency, and you said it was okay to broadcast, and we weren't bleeding on anybody. And we think that, you know, the Constitution says that we own the airwaves, and we're going to do that. So that's why this talk is called Yara the Media Matey, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the FCC. So I guess I'll tell you now a little bit about our regulations that we do. We have 4 rules. The 2 of them sort of happened on accident. The first rule, the biggest rule, is that we never, ever, ever use real names on the air. And as long as we do that, they can't press charges. Because they can't take Benign Punk to court. They have to take a person with a name and a social security number and all that to court. So as long as we never use real names, we don't have a lot of problem with that. The second rule is that we have no drugs or persons under 18 in the van. We call it the van. Now it's a studio. I don't know if I'm supposed to tell you that. and that's because if we have those things, it makes any trouble that we might have a lot worse. Basically, we learned that the FCC is not scary, but the police are, and the FBI is, and the CIA is, and the NSA is, and the SS is, and we don't want to piss any of them off. So as long as we don't have any minors in, and we're not contributing to any delinquency, and we're not doing any kind of controlled substance in the van, that will make any bus we may have significantly easier to deal with. So that's the second rule. The third rule is no guns. You'd be surprised. We actually had to make this rule up when people started doing it. I have no explanation. Colorado's just like that, I guess. And the fourth rule is also a rule we learned from experience, which is don't incite riot. we had a couple of DJs on the air shortly before the election who got a little rabid, and we decided that we didn't want to piss off the social service and tell people that we wanted to in any way bodily injure any kind of government officials. So those are our four rules, and with those four rules, we have managed to stay on the air for over 4 years, about 4.5 years now, and we see no end in sight. So it's continuing to grow, and more and more people are involved all the time. About half of the people who are involved are in the hacker community, and that's been really beneficial to us. So I think that's all I'll talk about legality, since that's a little less relevant to you folks. And I'll talk a little bit about some of the challenges that we faced coming up with rules in a sort of society that's all about breaking the rules. That's been a little interesting and trying for us. And basically, why we continue to do what we do and why we don't want a license. I'll start with the rules. Basically, we began with none of us knowing all of the people involved. That was one way that we protected ourselves. And many of us didn't know each other's real names. So when I got involved, I think there was about 10 people involved, and I knew maybe 3 of them. As more and more people got involved, we had to come up with systems to manage all of them. And we now have this sort of benevolent oligarchy of captains who are in charge of certain things. We set up the station a little differently now. We use a STL, and we broadcast everything over Shoutcast. And then that goes to a house somewhere in the city that has an internet connection and the antenna and the transmitter hidden, and none of the DJs, or very few of the DJs, even know where that is. That enabled us to have a full studio where we can record local bands, and we can have lots of people in to be on the show. And having this space required having some money. So there's membership dues. If you're a DJ, you have to pay a certain amount each month to keep the space open and whatnot. So that sort of added in all of this bureaucracy into this thing that was sort of anti-bureaucracy, which was, it's been a rough road, and a lot of people haven't taken well to it. One of the best examples I can give is the conflicts that we've had recently are about free speech, and we're having to think about the content that we broadcast. There were a few DJs who were so excited by the fact that we did not have a FCC license and that we could curse on the air that that's pretty much all they did. So they would have their little, like, 2 or 3 hour show, and they would be cursing the whole time. Like, there was one guy on record, 250 to 300 F words per hour. it's kind of hard. I don't know how to do that. So what we had was the community was calling in. We have these drug dealer cell phones prepaid where you don't have to give them your name or anything. And we give that number out over the air so they can call us and make requests. And we had all of these people calling us and writing us emails and telling us that they really appreciated what we were doing, but that they couldn't listen to us because we were too boring or offensive, or they didn't want their kids listening, or they couldn't listen at work and whatnot because there was too much free speech. And so we had to sort of face this issue. Were we a community radio station? Were we trying to cater to the needs that were not fulfilled by commercial radio? Or were we a freedom fighter for free speech? And we had to sort of make some decisions about what DJs we were going to keep around and what kind of audio content we were going to have in order to maintain the station. And there was a ongoing, it started even when I was living in Colorado, which was about 3 years ago now. And so the battle has been going on for about 3 years. Should Monk tell us that we can't say certain things? And what it came down to in the end a couple of months ago was that about half of our DJs left because Monk made the final decision that if you were being too gratuitous, he didn't want to say, you couldn't say anything in particular, or he certainly didn't want to censor audio content, but if you were offending all of our listeners and turning people off from our movement, that he didn't want you involved in the station, and it was his equipment and he could make that decision. So that's kind of it came down to a capitalist, very Colorado style decision at the end, which I think everyone is still a little uneasy about. He basically said, you know, if you don't like my pool, get out of my yard. So that's one of the issues that we face, and I guess I'd like to know how you guys deal with that out here and what you think of it, and I guess I'd like to open it up to questions.
Yeah? If you want them to respond back, You just have to let us know so they can change the levels. We can't have you both talking at the same time.
That would be great. Okay, so I'll sign off for a little bit, and we'll see what Colorado has to say about all the nasty things I said about them.
Can you hear us? Can you hear us? Or is it, it's all jacked up again. Hello? Let us know if you can hear us.
Hello? I thought the deal was I couldn't talk if they were talking.
They don't get that yet.
Oh. Okay, Monk. The situation is that the way the PA is set up or whatever, if I'm talking and you're talking, there's some interference. So I'm going to stop talking, and you guys can respond to everything I've said. Okay, signing off.
All right, so B9 is now off, I'm assuming, and I'm assuming you can hear us. Yeah, so just to kind of fill in the story a little bit, we've been on the air as of April 19th, will be 5 years. And B9's story about what happened from a free speech We should just keep talking, because she's not going to come back. All right. So we're going to keep talking here. What we had happen was we had about 45 DJs at the time, and
the F word was being used in a very gratuitous manner, kind of like
Yeah.
Every other word was fuck, and it got to the point where I couldn't listen to the station, and I started getting a lot of emails, and we got a lot of voice messages on the studio line saying that they loved the station but no longer could listen either. So what I did was I fired the entire staff, all 45 DJs, and we made the decision over the course of a week whether or not to come back on the air or not. Was this worth doing? Because the hassle had gotten so big. This is also a problem that the Santa Cruz guys, Free Radio Santa Cruz, has been going through the exact same thing over the last 3 to 4 months. I talked to V-Man, who's the founder of Santa Cruz Free Radio, yesterday about this exact topic. He ended up quitting the station. This is the founder of the station, ended up quitting. So it's really an issue. Once you've been on the air for a while, the content of your station is going to be a big deal. The technical aspects of setting up and running a pirate radio station are not insurmountable. They're not even that difficult. It's easy.
It is.
I wouldn't call it easy, but I would call it simple.
It's, yeah, okay.
Simple is the word. You happen to have some pretty sophisticated technical people on your side, as do we. If you've got that, and as you all know here at this conference, the
Chaos Computer Congress.
And this is a group of folks that won't have a problem setting up a station.
Right.
Where you're going to have problems is keeping the social aspects together. As B9 was telling you, we run as a benevolent dictatorship, which means I'm the dictator. As opposed to how we run things, which is as a collective.
That's right.
And that works great when you've got 6 or 7 people.
It doesn't when you've got 40.
It won't work when you've got 40. And that's what we found. As the station grew, there was just simply no way to run it other than as either a democracy or as a dictatorship. And since people were all volunteers, what we found was that 3 to 5 people ended up doing all of the work. And the other 35 to 40 people basically showed up for their shows, got drunk, cursed, and left. And that got old after a while. So when I fired everybody, which was about 4 months ago now, we selectively asked folks to come back. I first picked about 4 people that I trusted and I knew believed in the cause. And then we brought back first those 4 people, and those became the captains. And myself and the captains run the overall station. The captains are the ones that when an issue comes up, they decide it. And the only time I'll make a decision is if the captains can't get it figured out without me having to cast a vote, so to speak. So it's not really a benevolent dictatorship so much as a democracy, or a republic, really. And then we started bringing in DJs, 1 and 2 at a time, so we're back up to a couple of dozen now. And that seems to be about the right size. Between 15 and 25 DJs on a pirate radio station is pretty manageable. It also allows you to charge fairly low dues, and as long as you keep your overhead really low, you can operate very cheaply. And we raise money by having regular benefit shows about once every 2 to 4 months at local venues where we have bands come in, they'll play, and people will come pay at the door, and that helps support us in broken equipment, new equipment, things of that nature.
What can I interject?
Yes.
One thing I just want to make perfectly clear to the interested audience is, you know, we talked, Mug just talked about keeping dues low and low costs, this, that, and the other. KVFR is one of the most technically advanced pirate stations on the planet, which, as far as how things are done and how broadcast is achieved and the way the library is constructed and things of this nature, and just the level of equipment that's available. While all of that was not paid for through dues, KVFR has become self-sufficient recently and can continue to maintain that level of technical expertise. So you can have, what we've learned at Denver Free Radio is you can have a very, you know, high-tech station with low rates of failure and excellent sound for very, very little money.
Why don't you talk a little bit about that, about how you set up Denver Free Radio?
Well, Denver Free Radio, just to kind of change gears, basically an interested party, Monk, lent out a transmitter to myself and some of my cohorts in the 303, and we decided to go ahead and put up a radio station. We got busted about 6 times in less than 2 months, and we decided to go off the air. But, you know, other kids now have the transmitter, and other bad kids are probably doing something. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But the actual setup, was very simple. The setup is one computer. That computer runs SAM2, sends all of our audio to our Shoutcast server, and then our STL picks it up. We have one mixer, a few mics. We did not have, if you were to look at the van here in Boulder,
slow down, because I don't know if they know
what STL's STL's your studio transfer. Like, she did talk about those a second ago. But if you would look at the van here in Boulder, there is a ton of stuff. And by comparison, we have about 1/100th of the stuff in this van. The point is, you can get by with very, very little and get this done. The transmitter is the most expensive piece of hardware to get. You know, all you need is fast, reliable internet and somewhere to park your Shoutcast box and somebody that's going to host a transmitter for you and a computer and a mic and maybe a mixer, and you're ready to go.
Yep.
And you can't tell the difference on the air between what Denver Free Radio had from an equipment perspective. We've got a server with about a terabyte of...
Okay, so we're gonna try to wrap this up. We'll give you another minute here, but I want to give time for questions. So, last thoughts.
This is simple stuff to do. It's essential stuff to do. It has to do with taking back the airwaves and not letting the government, be it a European government, an American government, a South American government, does not matter. The reality is this is a limited resource that belongs to the people. It's something that we should have access to, and today large conglomerates of corporations control it, which is just bullshit. And you should all take to the airwaves, and we should set up thousands of pirate radio stations and take back the airwaves. By default, we will become the law. And that's the goal of Boulder Free Radio and of pirate radio in general in the United States. I'm done.
Thank you very much in Colorado. Yeah, thanks. Okay, so I guess I'd like to open it up to questions. Anybody? Nobody? Yeah, sir? All right, so the two questions, the first was how many listeners do we have on Shoutcast, and where do we get our music from, our audio content? The listeners, we have, I think we have a capacity for maybe 50, maybe a little more. Our ISPs are sort of friends of ours, so we switch them around. So depends on who we're at, what our capacity are. Our normal online listeners, probably about 10, maybe a little less. The local listening population, in the thousands. The people who are listening on FM in the area, definitely in the thousands. Especially now, it's a much bigger community than it was when I started with them. And they're very well known in the community now. So they have thousands of listeners 24/7. Where we get our music from? At Kaza, like everybody else.